You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Take one. Knock, knock.
Who it is?
We're Stephen and Dana, and we can't believe you found our fucking podcast.
We're so glad you're listening to it. We would never listen to it.
I don't even want to listen to it to edit it.
I don't even want to wake up in the morning. We're Stephen and Dana, and we're in the room.
Stephen Farrisee.
Yes?
I've heard that you've never seen or know much about how to succeed in business without really trying the musical.
This is true. I was certainly living here when the revival happened at the Hirschfeld, pre-Kinky Boots.
Big ol' revival with Daniel Radcliffe.
Huge. Huge.
America's, again, just one of the world's very own Harry Potter.
I don't know why I didn't get there. I don't know if... I don't know. I don't know. But it didn't happen.
Well, let's be clear. We love a free ticket.
We love a free ticket. But, like, let's also be clear. 2011? At least for 2011... I may have still been, like, in college and had plenty of, like, student rush or student ticket available to me. I graduated 2011, but I feel like I could have, you know, made that work for myself. And I just didn't. Maybe I was scrambling, trying to figure out what to do now.
There was a Broadway revival. Well, first of all, it opened on Broadway in 1961.
Mm-hmm.
So it's old.
Which is my jam. Like, I love a 60s musical.
Yeah. There was a Broadway revival in 1995 starring Matthew Broderick
and Megan Mullally. That's the one I know anything about. I remember that album with its green cover and, like, like the letters were buildings and dollar signs and... It looked fun, and I remember that Tony performance, Megan Mullally singing Paris Original. And I remember digging that song and digging her performance from that. I'm just looking at a musical number list, a run of show, to see if there are other songs I know that I don't realize are from this. Brotherhood of Man, I couldn't sing it for you, but I didn't know that that was... Her to succeed.
There is a great, and it's on YouTube, but there's a great performance from the Tonys that they did of Brotherhood of Man with Daniel Radcliffe and John Larroquette, and also featuring like a Maria Bamford looking legit soprano voice, Ellen Kelly, being thrown around. It's a great show-stopping, big, old Broadway dance number.
Yes, I'm remembering
it
now.
It's great. Yeah, where you're like, ah, Harry Potter can do musical theater. Yes, you pro.
You pro. You pro.
You pro. But Megan Mullally, like, I got into her as a musical theater performer, and this is in the time of Napster and LimeWire, when you're downloading... When you're downloading music, I was like, what else has Megan Mullally done? And I saw that she was in a revival of this. And I downloaded Paris Original and Happy to Keep His Dinner Warm and I Believe in You. So that was my introduction. And I definitely saw the revival with Daniel Radcliffe and really enjoyed it.
Yes. I'm going to be watching the film from 1967 featuring Robert Morse, who did it on Broadway. So that at least feels genuine. Like, no, I didn't see Funny Girl on Broadway, but at least I saw Barbara DuFanny in that movie. I think this will be really
fun. You know
fun.
What?
I'm trying to see. It received positive reviews and currently holds an 89% fresh rating on Rotten Tomatoes. I feel it's like... You know, a good movie adaptation. I would love to discuss that with somebody who knows the show better and can maybe vouch for some of the differences. But I feel okay watching the movie musical on this one, as opposed to something like Sweeney Todd, which we did a couple of weeks ago.
Well, and there's also, you know, Spotify. You can listen to the cast albums of all of these versions.
Totally.
So that's fun. I actually just listened to the current revival Daniel Radcliffe version on Spotify this morning and learned, I don't remember this because I didn't know her beforehand, nor do I know her now, but your neighbor is the Megan Mullally part, Rosemary Hemingway.
Hey!
Mark Fisher Fitness.
Before she was a mama.
I was like, how do I know that name? Oh, get it. Okay, Tammy Blanchard was also in it. Mm-hmm. And who else? Oh, Mary Faber. She was in Avenue Q.
Yes.
She's great.
I saw her in Avenue Q.
It's a big chorus heavy.
Rudy Valley's in this movie. I'm excited.
Rudy Valley. I was going to say, I think you're going to like this show just because it's a workplace comedy. Not unlike Superstore or Kinky Boots or Promises, Promises. You know, it's a lot of like chorus people, workers, secretaries,
sure.
Kind of like.
Like Superstore or Kinky Boots.
You know, everyone's singing in unison, you know.
Sure.
It's that kind of
and
thing.
And it's a 60s movie musical. I love that feel.
Yes. Yeah. So it's easy to understand. There's
it's musical comedy. It's musical comedy.
Also, the creative team for Guys and Dolls is the same for this.
We just watched Guys and Dolls, believe it or not. Another, like, we're in quarantine. Yeah. John and I, like, let's do something crazy. Let's watch Guys and Dolls.
Wow, you're alive. You're alive.
Well, listen.
But yeah, it's got that flavor.
Life, when in, like, the real world do we have time to sit down and watch Guys and Dolls? On HBO Max. This irresistible
Paris original.
I can't sing while you're singing delayed.
But yeah, it's a rags to riches story. We really want to cheer on J. Pierpont Finch.
Can't wait.
It's really, he's charismatic. He's nerdy. He's, I don't know, you just really enjoy watching him try to make it. And fall in love on the way.
Oh. Well, sign me up.
I might actually watch that original film as well.
Oh, and it's with original staging. The film has original staging, so that's cool. I'll get the Fosse realness. Sweet!
Oh, another fun fact is that... So this is a 1961 musical by Frank Lesser, and the book is by Abe Burrows, Jack Weinstock, and Willie Gilbert, based on Shepard Mead's 1952 book of the same name. Okay, fine. When I said book by Abe Burrows, guess whose son... Wait. Guess whose dad is Abe Burrows?
The director of All the Will and Graces.
Yes. So his son is Jimmy Burrows, James Burrows.
Thank you.
And he directed All of the Will and Graces.
This is Steven. This is my before I've seen How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying voice. And next time you hear me, I will have seen How to Succeed in Business Without Really
next
Trying.
Next time you hear us, we'll be post How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying. This is how to create a podcast without really trying.
Yep. This is how to create a transition into our advertisements without really trying.
And scene.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Hi, Dana.
And we're back.
Broadway Blind Spot time.
Thank you for joining us for yet another round of Broadway Blind Spot. The first one
How many of you did the homework? How many of you did the assignment?
The first one was Sweeney Todd, where we discussed Sweeney Todd. I had not seen it, and Stephen had. And then I went and watched the original version on Amazon Prime starring Angela Lansbury. Guess what? This episode is how to succeed in business without really trying, as we have just, this is part two, so you already know that.
Yes, you've heard like that as much as we don't know about it. And we went and watched the film. This was in my blind spot. I've never seen a production. I'd never seen the film. I don't know it. And now I do. I saw the movie. Okay, I took some notes.
Yeah, so I watched the movie too. I had never seen the movie. I think it was from 1967. Am I wrong? That seems about right.
No, I think that's right. But you have seen the show?
I've seen the show
really well. You've seen it.
No, I've seen the show twice. Once with Daniel Radcliffe, and the second time I think I saw it with Nick Jonas on Broadway. Right. And John Larroquette, I think, was in it both times.
Duh.
I mean, hello. I was a huge fan of Night Court growing up. Huge.
Irreplaceable.
Anyway, I've seen it twice, so there. It's not like I know the show really well, but I've at least seen it.
The most fun fact that I was able to come up with was right out of the opening credits. Would you believe it?
I would. Hit me.
Get this. So I'm watching and we're getting the credits and it's all vintage and shit.
Yeah.
And we're watching and it says color design, Mary Blair. Mary Blair is the fucking colorist for all those brilliant Disney movies in the 50s. She did Cinderella. She did Alice in Wonderland. She did the fucking It's a Small World ride. Like, she was an original Imagineer. Well, no, she wasn't an Imagineer because she didn't do the rides. She did the films, but she was like OG Disney.
Stephen, cool. how do you know her name? Is this just from growing up?
She's such a brilliant artist.
No, I need to know where you know her from. Like, is it just you as a kid always seeing the title Mary Blair? Or is it because you watched...
No, it was later. It was later in life for sure. I love Alice in Wonderland. I love the book especially, but like I love Disney's version. I love the Alice tale. I love it. So I guess as I got older and like wanted to dive deep into my Alice shit, probably in middle school, I like read through those opening credits of Disney's Alice in Wonderland. Because I've always noticed the colors. I'm like, this is a fucking purple and pink cat. I want that.
Yeah.
So I'm like, who's in charge of these fucking colors? It's Mary Blair. So I look up Mary Blair. Oh, she did Cinderella too. All those fucking bubbles where she's singing in harmony with herself.
Yeah.
It's like, that is iconic animation to me. Of course, Stephen, it's Mary Blair.
Do you remember going through things with a fine tooth comb? I do. I remember going to the library.
I sat there with the remote and you would like hit play and then you'd pause on the title card and you'd read everything and then you'd hit play again and it would go to the next title card.
Yeah.
And you had to read. There was no like online, let me just look it up. Here's a full list of the credits in PDF format.
Can this be a Mary Blair appreciation episode? Because I feel like
my life is a Mary Blair appreciation episode.
She would be dead if she knew that two elder millennials are talking about her with such vivre on a podcast.
I'll send you, there's an Instagram that just posts like her concept art and just shares her shit.
Yeah. I don't know.
No,
if the...
frills, no commentary, no LOLs. Just like, here's what it is. Yeah. Here's the medium and here's the year and enjoy.
I don't think the listeners know this, but you are very much a color person.
Oh, we love colors.
You love colors. You're colors very much the Pantone.
I've been to a colorist.
Numbers. Yeah, you've been to a colorist.
Katie Finneran sent me to a colorist who taught me that I was a true winter. So now when I shop for clothes, I know my palette.
Anyway, we're not even past the opening credits. The Pink Pantherness of it all, you know, like the actual color of the city behind a huge yellow font. Gorgeous.
Yeah.
Love it already. Yeah. Plus the Nelson Riddle Orchestra, plus the original like choreography by Bob Fosse. I mean, you're getting like hits.
Which interesting story.
Already.
So okay, we were looking at this too because the choreography credit was weird. It was like
right.
It say based on original choreography by Bob Fosse. But
yes.
Bob Fosse was like not a part of this film. And also, originally, they had hired, like, a not-known choreographer at that time, whose name I didn't write down and I'm currently regretting. So they had hired him, and then, I guess, I don't know if there were issues, I don't know if they just needed help and time, I don't know, but Bob Fosse was brought in. But he didn't want to take the credit away from this new guy.
Wow.
So that's how they arranged that. I said it was probably the nicest thing Fosse ever did.
Wow. That is worth mentioning, for sure.
I don't know where John read that. Really quality journalism here with that story. But it's what I have to contribute at this time.
I mean, just as a broad statement, the coloring, the costumes, the vibrancy of this film, if you are attracted to that kind of thing, big 60s colorings, you know, there isn't a pattern in sight. The women are wearing solid mm-hmm. colors, head to toe, hat to glove, shoes are all pink, the dress is pink, the hat is pink, it's lime green,
yeah.
Yellows, blues, jade greens, you know, it's very appealing to the eye.
Super fun. I was thinking, you know, because watching any movie of that time, especially one that is, who has a genesis of a theater piece, was theater before it was a movie, like,
right.
The playing fields were so much more level because even in film, you had to make it happen. Sure, you had the camera to help you do that and editing to help you do that, but you couldn't CGI your way through it, just like on stage. You had to actually do what you were showing the audience, which you don't have to do anymore.
And they used some actors from the Broadway show. Michelle Lee made her mm-hmm. film debut after having originated
okay.
the role.
And they cut half her material.
I know. How gorgeous is she?
I realized this more and more as the film went on, and is one of my gripes with it,
mm-hmm.
Is that really, it cut any character that wasn't him. It really focused tight on him, and everyone else was dressing. And that was a shame, because I went back and I looked at the recordings. I'm like, there are more songs. Rosemary has more to do.
Michelle Lee just knew everything. You know, mm-hmm. I'm like, you know so much more than everyone else in this
Wouldn't
film.
Wouldn't she gorge?
As a character. Like, she was so knowing and beautiful and fierce. Oh, my God.
I loved her singing I Believe in You.
Yeah. Man, but I would have given anything to listen to her sing Paris Original. Stephen, how much did you love the primping ballet when they were all at their desks?
You've literally tapped... This whole episode, you have tapped every one of my notes and in the order in which I wrote them.
Yes, it is shocking that my notes are in order of the film.
The primping ballet was divine. It reminded me of you.
100%.
Me coming to pick you up from work before going to Joe's Pub.
Teasing my hair, doing my winged eyes.
Hanging out in the bathroom.
Absolutely. Spritzing
right
and spraying.
At your desk, baby wiping.
Oh my God. I just loved how glamorous it was. It was so, like, it's kind of a mockery of...
We've both been in secretarial pools.
A mockery of secretaries, and I think there was a wink there for sure.
I think a little bit. I think they called out workplace inequality pretty on the fucking nose.
Feminist.
And I think the farce of the whole thing, that the whole thing is such a satire.
Absolutely. So fun.
And that they're just like, yeah, this is the horrible thing that's happening. Okay, but let's help you do it really well. You know?
Satire is the perfect word.
The producers of it all, they're like, this is a horrible plan. Let's commit to it really hard. It's gonna work until it doesn't.
May I say something very quickly?
You absolutely can.
About one of my favorite characters in the film was Bud Frump.
You, like I said, you've touched on all of my notes.
What a scamp of a character. So fun. Oh my God. Big toothy grin.
Acting with his teeth.
Acting with his teeth. He plays the Muckety Muck's nephew.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would have... Purse first? No, teeth first, babe. This guy comes in teeth first. He is providing some stellar physical comedy, and he adds such a level of goofiness. Steven, I think we have the same favorite character.
Obviously, the Lilius White.
Yes. I knew it.
What, JB's secretary?
Miss Jones.
Yeah.
Her name is Miss Jones. Mrs. Jones?
Miss Jones!
And she's such a B. Arthur of a character. Just very, like, oh, all right.
She's 6.5 feet tall. And so are her feet.
Mr. Bigley, we'll be right with you. All right, what do you want? There are so many fun bits in the film, at least, and the show, such as Mr. Bigley, at one point, is told that his wife is on the phone by Mrs. Jones, and he says, you know that talking to my wife upsets me. And then he asks for, he goes, where's my, you know, and you think he's going to bring out some, like, bourbon or some kind of scandalous Playboy or something. And he takes out his knitting and starts knitting. Excuse me, that's hilarious. And so 60s. It was so tender, you know, that kind of, like, non-threatening joke where you can infer that he probably was going to ask for something else, but no, it's knitting. The head honcho likes to knit for his anxiety.
I can really see how having an audience boosts that show.
Boosts, absolutely.
And I can also see how giving each character more to do
also
lifts that show.
It's a really full stage.
Because as the audience, no matter who's on stage, there's like a side plot happening. There
are a lot of characters.
You know.
Lots for the chorus to do. I mean, it's an office full of people really milling about, going in and out of doors, and secretaries and men in suits and window washers and the whole thing. So, yeah, I mean, it's a full company, babe.
Right.
Full company.
Yeah. And as you hold that Rosie plush, just this morning I watched the opening number from the Tonys, the 54th annual, when Megan Mullally sang part of Paris Original as part of the opening. They were highlighting Broadway vets who had, like, turned Hollywood.
Really? Yes, I'm holding my Rosie O'Donnell doll.
It was Jesse L. Martin, and it was Jane Krakowski.
Wow.
And Rosie's hosting, and they had, like, a whole choir in the back. It was fab.
Remember Rosie hosting the Tonys?
I remember watching that. I remember it.
I want Rosie to host again. Come back. All right, so this is a violent tangent, but didn't Mr. Bigley kind of look like Prue from the Great British Baking Show?
Yeah!
They're twins! No, but real talk. I fully fell in love with Michelle Lee.
I did too.
Yeah, and here's what I wrote. I wrote, Michelle fills every second with intention, always listening, always reacting.
Always listening.
She is always giving you something. There's no blank stare. There is pure engagement.
So I ask again, why did they cut so much of her part?
I don't know. I mean, it's a film, so it clocks in at 2 hours. What is your feedback on Finch, the main guy?
Robert Morse.
Yeah, Robert Morse.
Robert Moore?
Robert Morse.
Morse, right. Oh, so great, so charming.
Right?
I love his little gap.
Yep.
His little front tooth gap. As a fellow front tooth gapper.
Whatever.
Nailed it.
So if you don't know the story, it's about J. Pierpont Finch, who is a window washer, and he's reading a book called How to Succeed in Business. And he kind of breaks into this company and charms the pants off of people, starting in the mailroom, and eventually becomes like VP. And
he does it.
It's
like
really a short amount of time, and it's really funny to watch him.
It's kind of working, girl. You know, we've had so many workplace comedies.
How dare you with that reference?
Kind of like this, right? I'm nobody, but I'm gonna make it to the top, and I'm not gonna wait 15 years to do it.
She's gonna make it after all.
It was all too easy for him.
I mean, he was a white man, so... So in the role of Finch, couldn't you see a Nick Jonas, a Daniel Radcliffe, especially Matthew Broderick?
Yes, but if you look at now, like, the sequence of, you know, production contract Finches, they just keep getting hotter. So what happened to the character man?
Like, where did all the uggos go?
I'm not saying character men are ugly by any means. I'm saying, you know, interesting to look at.
Okay. Yes. I hear you. So Daniel Radcliffe, I feel, you can dress him up, you can dress him down. I don't think that he's, like, super hot, but I do see what you're saying. Like, I think out of all of them, Daniel Radcliffe is the most
I just think
kind
the,
of character-y.
Like, the lack of character-ness. Those, like, leading men. They've established themselves as leading men. And yes, it is a leading man, but it's a character man still.
Mm-hmm. No, I see. So who would you cast?
You can only be so funny when you're that good looking. The physical comedy won't land the same if you're not funny.
Uh-huh.
If you're not character-y, if you don't have something to play with. If everything's perfect, you're like, get it together.
Sing out, Louise.
This was also a recent discussion in the media surrounding the revival of Little Shop when they announced a replacement. I think it was Jeremy Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
And people were, you know, nothing against Jeremy or his abilities or his performance or whatever.
Sure, of course
it's
not.
It's just that, like, time out. We're talking about Seymour.
Y'all, we feel very strongly about our character actors and actresses. We must protect them. At all costs.
Guys, In the Room is a safe haven for character performers.
This is a safe space.
If you're weird, if you look funny, come hang with us. I really don't mean to shit on any, like, past Finch's performance. I just, let's pay attention to, like, character parts versus Prince Charming parts.
Justice for character actors. That's all we're saying. Justice. If you're going to cast a new movie musical remake...
A new movie musical.
Yes. Who would you cast? Inquiring minds.
How old is Finch supposed to be? I can't... That's a good question.
I mean, 20s. I think the actual number he says is 27.
Supposed to be.
Yeah.
Gideon Glick.
That is a perfect...
And I think he could do it on stage or in film.
Yes. I think that is a perfect casting... And we are huge Gideon Glick fans in this podcast room.
Yeah, and Gideon's done some movies. Shout out Ocean's 8. He had a little scene with Rihanna.
I believe my first introduction to Gideon Glick was with you, Stephen. It was off-Broadway, and he was starring in Significant Other, and we were utterly moved.
Utterly moved. That was great. Significant Other was... so, so great. I hope everyone got a chance to see it.
And if you didn't, I hope it's revived, or you can in some
Dana
form.
Dana brought me roses when we went to see that.
What? Wait, why? I can't remember.
Yeah. Because Bedbury was participating in the post-show dating game. I was selected as a contestant.
Oh my gosh. Wait, that's actually a highlight of my life, and I kind of forgot that that happened.
Listen, Barbara fucking Barry was auctioning me off. Get into it.
That was so fun. Wait, I have footage of that. Maybe we should post that on the Instagram account. I'm going to hit you with a fun fact. Dick Van Dyke was considered for the role of Finch, but he turned it down due to concerns that he was too old for the role.
He would have been perfect. I mean, know thyself, he's right. He was too old.
I mean, talk about a character actor.
And also, had he done it, we would have all forgiven him because they would have cast the whole thing a little older. Mm-hmm, and he would have been great.
But he's that perfect example of a character actor who also was a leading man.
The wiser.
Leading man, Dick Van Dyke. Brilliant.
What else did I really, really love? Again, the costumes. I thought they were great.
Mm-hmm.
Costumes.
The whole style of the film needs a shout out. The style. Whether or not you like the story, I mean.
You know what the movie did? Like, the more I watched it, the more I realized was missing, and the more I realized this was just a portion of the story. It made me really want to see it on stage. It made me really want to catch it next time it's anywhere nearby. I wrote a friend who was on the tour, and they said, and I think I, having now seen it, I can align myself with it, quote, "I find the movie a bit boring, whereas the show is pretty effervescent as satire." One of those few musicals to have the Pulitzer Prize alongside South Pacific, Chorus Line, and Rent, for example.
Wow.
And they pointed out that how rare that is for satire, for a satire to get the Pulitzer. So that says something. I think it's tough to feel how funny it is without an audience. The movie feels a bit dry.
That is true. I can see how that is a thing. I mean, the energy that is given off stage and is reciprocated from the audience. And that's interesting what you said about the satire. It absolutely winks at the audience. The audience is in on the satire, man.
Sure. And I think that's why it's still being done. They were just doing it up at Westchester Broadway Theater when the pandemic hit. I think they had done their, maybe an invited dress or just a dress rehearsal before Corona shut everything down a year ago. But I think that's why the show can still be done, because it does wink.
Yeah, and you can always change up your tone in order to, I don't know, bring it to present day, you know?
Totally.
Yeah.
It's controlled winking.
How hard are you going to hit the satire? That's always in flux.
It can still be, you know, set in the 60s. It can still be a period piece, and it doesn't have to be offensive or dated. It can still be done, for sure.
I liked the first half better than the second.
And I think that's because they cut so much.
Yeah.
That by the second half, we're like, I need another thing. I need another thing happening for me to keep my eye on.
And, I mean, it's a film, so maybe they had to cut things for time. Like, I would have loved to hear Paris Original, but does it move the story forward? Who knows? Babe, what is all the racket?
The heat.
Oh my God, the tapping. Listeners, I'm so sorry.
It's better than what was happening 20 minutes before this call.
Well, listen to that. It's like freaking Bojangles. Savion Glover.
Podcasting from home's a bitch.
All right. We're women of the 90s. What is your final take on How to Succeed?
Listen, I would say watch it. If you're not familiar with the show, if you're not going to sit there and nitpick, like, oh, this is different. Oh, they cut this.
Amen.
If you can just watch it to enjoy it, it's fun. It's really fun to revisit those, like, 50s and 60s movie musicals.
Yeah, it did not feel like homework.
The way they're shot, the way that they did that, just what that formula looked like then, Bye Bye Birdie, is of that same ilk.
Uh-huh. You know, I'm a huge fan of the Nelson Riddle Orchestra. If you're not familiar with them, they did an album with Linda Ronstadt.
Super cool.
Yeah, it is super cool. I just really dig that vibe and that just Nelson Riddle sound in general.
Great score. Great score. And a lot of the music that they cut, they did, you know, incorporate into the scoring, like Paris Original, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's an if you know, you know.
they gave you a little something-something, if you know.
Sure.
Stephen, darling, what's coming up next for us in our Broadway blind spot?
Yes, join us in April for Pippin.
Stephen, I'm not going to lie. I'm kind of digging this forcibly doing homework and forcibly educating ourselves on things that we didn't know. So,
but hopefully we've inspired you to, you know, sit down one night and turn on something different. And on that note, bye.
Bye.
In the Room with Stephen and Dana is produced by Stephen Farazee
and Dana Craig. Special thanks to Joel Wagoner for tinkling the ivories on our theme song. Hit him up at joelwagoner.com.
We apologize, and you're welcome. We'd also like to thank Jesse Wiener, W-I-E-N-E-R, for our jazzy original music sprinkled throughout each episode.
You can find him at jessewiener.com.
Last but certainly not least, we'd like to thank Kevin Thomas Garcia for taking all of our ridiculous photos. You can find him online at ktgnyc.com. We are all over the internet on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at In The Room Pod.
Follow us, like us, share us, pimp us out. And don't forget to subscribe to In The Room Podcast. We everywhere, so subscribe. And thank you so much for listening.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.